When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Jason Lockenford, CBS Sports NFL Insider. Jason, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
We're doing well, man. I got Randy Cross sitting aside from me. Man, you know, I really don't know where to start. There's so many storylines in the NFL these days. Of course, you've got the NFL protests that are going on, and some teams a little split on that, on how they move forward. But I want to start on the field. I'm a little concerned about my man Cam Newton. How concerned are they down there in Carolina country?
You know, the team is taking everything in stride, of course, and taking the long view, and, you know, he missed a lot of time, and it's going to take some time to ramp him up and all that stuff, and I get that, but, yeah, if you're a Carolina Panthers fan, or if you're a football fan, just sort of, you know, who appreciates Cam's game, and you're watching this, it's a little tough to watch. He doesn't look like the same guy. He's not doing the sort of Cam MVP things. But I do think there's certainly a legitimate sentiment to be had that, yeah, you know, he had surgery and he didn't have a normal off season, and this is still kind of his training camp. I think the key will really be, you know, let's give it another week or two. Like, we're into October now. We're out of the first quarter of the season. Does he look like, you know, a spry, you know, strong, you know, dominant athlete? Because this is a person we get accustomed to being, you know, the best athlete on the field, at least for parts of his career. He certainly was on something close to a week-in, week-out basis. So, you know, he gets hit a lot, and the offensive line isn't great, and they've kind of rescaled the offense a little bit and don't do quite as much read option stuff as they used to. So there's still some things they need to figure out, but he doesn't look quite the same to me, and I don't know if some of that has to do with all the sort of hits and abuse he's taken, or if it is just related to trying to come back from this surgery.
Where does it seem? You've seen a lot of quarterbacks over the last decade or so, great young, great into their third and fourth, get to fifth or so. And it seems like they get kind of old suddenly. Is that traceable back to the amount of hits they take?
I mean, that would sort of be the first hunch, right? I mean, that's where you would kind of start looking, well, okay, did something happen to them physically that altered their throwing motion or altered their decision-making or just altered their overall ability to avoid hits and to make plays? You know, for RG3, it didn't even take, you know, 5 years, right? I mean, his prime was like a season, you know, and then it was diminishing returns. You know, Andrew Luck, I think, you know, probably what was about 3 years before he really started getting, you know, punished to the point of, you know, sitting out weeks on end and broken ribs or, you know, significant issues with his shoulder. And obviously the last 2 years for him have been kind of lost seasons. I guess everyone sort of has their own parabola of how they develop and their own learning curve and all that stuff. But yeah, it's weird that guys would you wouldn't expect ascending players, guys who've been in MVP discussions, guys who have played in the postseason and thrived, you wouldn't expect them to be sort of declining for reasons other than health. You know, I mean, usually when quarterbacks get into their prime, that runs through their 30s, you know, into their mid-30s, and then some guys are able to push it into their late 30s, and other guys, you know, seem to start hitting the wall around 35, 36. I certainly think in Cam's case, a lot of it is physical, and then does the physical lead to mental? You know, do they change certain things and change the way they play, even maybe subconsciously, just because of what they've been through?
Mm. When I watched Jacoby Brissett the other day, I wasn't surprised. This guy's always had talent when he was at Florida prior to transferring to NC State. and he showcased it there as well. Of course, the Patriots, they drafted him, and since he's been traded to Indianapolis. Are they surprised there in Indy at how quickly he has commanded this offense? I know it's just one game in which he went 17-24, about 250 and a touch, but the guy seems so calm out there having to learn a new playbook. Are they surprised that he's picked it up so quickly?
Yeah, excuse me, a little bit, certainly. And if you go back the week before against Arizona, like, he wasn't awful. I mean, he had a couple of really nice drives there, and he kept that team in the game. Were they quite as prolific as they would have liked? I guess not, but the defense kind of wilted in the second half a little bit. I mean, he did not play a bad game against Arizona by any stretch, especially considering it was, you know, to your point, BJ, the first time he had played with that ball club, and he hadn't only been around those guys for a few weeks in practice and hadn't been in that system, didn't really have any natural ties to those coaches. So, yeah, I think he certainly has opened some eyes. And, again, you could say, well, it's just the Cleveland Browns, but, boy, he was dominant in the first half of that game. In the first half of that game, he goes 9 for 12 for 206 yards, throws for a touchdown, runs for two. Looked like vintage Mike Vick in one of those runs. I mean, the 360 spin move, yeah. And, you know, he kind of had some of that human joystick stuff going on. And, obviously, he can move the pocket. He's difficult to defend. You have to spy him. So, you know, he's going to attract somebody out of the run game or the pass game just to keep an eye on him, which, frankly, you know, the Colts could use because they're not overloaded with talent. I've been impressed by him, and certainly the Colts have been impressed by him. The teammates have been excited by the energy he brings to the huddle and some of the kind of the unpredictability that is now a part of their offense. Saw him hook up with Hilton on a really big play, kind of a busted play, but something that those two made happen. Yeah, I mean, the Colts really needed a jolt of something coming out of that debacle in week one against the Rams. They needed a reason to feel good, somebody to inspire a little bit of confidence that, you know, hey, this season isn't lost just because Andrew Luck's probably out for 5 or 6 more weeks, and we looked like, you know, absolute dog caca in week one. So good for Jacoby, man. You know, I have enjoyed watching him play, and you know, he's someone who looks like he's got a future in this league. I don't know that he's destined just to be Andrew Luck's long-term backup. I mean, he may turn him into a trade chip.
Yeah.
And their young GM, yeah, Chris Ballard, has already showed he's not afraid to make trades. That may be a trade chip for them this offseason that they turn into something a whole lot more than whatever Philip Dorsett becomes for the Patriots.
You know, looking at the results from this last weekend, Jason, are the Jets that improved from a week-to-week basis, or do the Dolphins really just right now sort of blow?
I think I'm going to look at last week. There were some teams that I think were in some situations that caught up to them. And you know, the Dolphins had the horrible storm. You know, the hurricane come through. Week one got thrown on its ear. You got guys on the bye where they didn't think they would be. Then they all go out to L.A. for a week. And they really play hard and, you know, beat the Chargers pretty good and make a statement, but then you got to fly all the way back. And now you got to go to your house, right? And you've got to check on it. And you've got neighbors who have been affected by the storm. And you've got another non-normal work week. And then you've got to travel again that week, and you still haven't played a home game yet. And I think that, and look at the Tampa as well, the other team that went through that, where, you know, Tampa loses week one. Everything gets reshuffled. Week two, they beat the snot out of the Bears. But now you kind of get back into the routine, and you know, you're still dealing with some things, and you start trying to figure stuff out about, you know, just logistics of, you know, is the school okay, and is this okay, and is that okay? And, you know, the football game kind of sneaks up on you, and the next thing you know, Minnesota's beating the brakes off of them by halftime. So I don't know that that's a coincidence, guys. You know, I think both those teams were really up for their first game, which got pushed to week two. You know, and then you're traveling a little more. You're dealing with some stuff. You're going on the road again, and they just didn't. You know, they couldn't put much together, either of those teams. You know, unfortunately for Miami, from a travel standpoint, I mean, now it's an even screwier week. You're going out to London, and then you're coming back, and you still don't get a home game. You got to go to Tennessee, where they can play a little bit of football, and you don't get a home game until week five. So these next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting for the Dolphins, and I think if you look at Adam Gase's reaction, the young coach there knows it. Like, they've got to kind of regroup and not feel sorry for themselves and figure out a way to navigate what's become an increasingly difficult schedule for them by you know, obviously by no doing of their own, but just the natural disaster coupled with, you know, losing that bye, coupled with the early schedule that was already put in front of them, that was already, you know, challenging from a travel standpoint. These are a big couple of weeks now. So no, I'm not ready to crown the Jets yet. I will say this, though, look at their schedule. They get Jacksonville this week. Jacksonville just won the Super Bowl in London last week against the Ravens. That was, you know, 44-7. That could be a trap game for them. And then the Jets get the Browns. I mean, dare I say
A trap game Jets, for the Jags?
Dude, they have 44-7? Yeah, I think so. Coming back, not taking the bye, short week. They probably figure, we got the Jets. Look at that. We just beat the snot out of Baltimore in a foreign country. I'm just saying. And then the Jets get the Browns. I mean, the Jets could... I don't want to get too crazy here, but Jets could be like 3-2 or something like that. They weren't supposed to win a game, remember?
I recall that. Trust me, I've heard it from my cohorts here in the studio. Jason Lockenfor, CBS Sports NFL Insider. Speaking of the Dolphins, Lawrence Timmons, he's been reinstated. Can you shed some light on that situation?
Yeah, I mean, this was very unusual. This is a guy who, during that impromptu week one bye week, showed up at a Steelers practice where he doesn't play for the Steelers anymore. I mean, I know he did his entire career, but so that was a little odd. He's on the side, you know, he's a current member of another NFL team, and he's in the Steelers building during a practice day talking to coaches and out on the sidelines at practice and expressing some reservations to Steelers players about the decision he made and saying, maybe I never should have left Pittsburgh. And then 6 days later, he's AWOL on the Miami Dolphins. He leaves their team hotel on a Saturday afternoon. No one accounts for him until, you know, 12 to 18 hours later when he's located early, I guess probably about 12, 15 hours later, when he's located in California, seemingly on his way back to Pittsburgh. He was inactive week one. And the Dolphins had a decision to make, like, what are we really going to do here? If we continue to make him inactive beyond this week, then, you know, are we going to suspend him for the maximum of 4 games for conduct detrimental and just move on? Or is this somebody we think we can still sort of, you know, make a reclamation project here and, figure out whatever was going on with him? Maybe it was just an episode. He was having a bad couple of weeks, dealing with some issues with, you know, his child in Pittsburgh, and you know, is he somebody we can move on and play football with? And look, had they won week two and, you know, continued to look like a team on the march, I'm not positive that, you know, Lawrence Timmons would be active this weekend, but they didn't, and now they're going to London, and, you know, it's attrition and all hands on deck, and they're comfortable that there won't be any more, you know, sort of strange occurrences, and, you know, he's saying all the right things, so they're going to give it a go. But certainly one of the more unusual stories in the league this season, because he's not a guy who had a history of not showing up or sort of, you know, bailing on his team or doing his own thing. That's not who he was for the entirety of his career, and you just hope that, you know, he had a bad week and it's behind him.
Hey, Jason, at any time, was it considered by the NFL, given these back-to-back natural disasters that happened and the amount of disruption that was put upon the sports world in general, but the NFL in particular, was it ever considered to postpone or cancel these London games for some of these teams this year? I mean, or was it just purely a financial grab where the money's there, the commitment's made, and, you know, the heck with the travel, the heck with the wear and tear on the people. We've got to just stay committed to our things.
Well, I mean, look, the Dolphins expressed reservations in light of what happened, and they're the team that's really, truly, directly affected by it, because, you know, I laid it out there. They lose week one. I mean, they lose their game week one. Week one becomes a bye. Week two, you're out in California. Week three, you're playing in New York City. And then week four, you're going to London. So, yeah, they asked if there was something that, you know, Stephen Ross expressed some reservations, their owner, and suggested to the league office that maybe they could massage that game or move that game or just plain play that game in Miami. Since the stadium was okay now, and those fans hadn't had a home game yet, and maybe that would be a nice diversion for them. And boy, his team could you know, they don't need any more frequent flyer miles. You know, they're good. We'd be fine playing that one at home. And they were told that, yeah, that's not something that the league, you know, could really do at this point. I mean, is it financial? I mean, that there are, you know, as much as the league office is not for profit, obviously all these individual teams are, and the overall league is for profit. And those tickets had been sold, and the stadium had been groomed, and they were ready to do this. And you had TV crews that were already going to be over there, and people dedicated to, you know, putting that product out there. So it was, from the league's perspective, there was sort of no going back at that point. You know, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm certainly not in love with that decision. You know, and we'll see how they sort of handle that, because that's sort of one more, I guess, little hurdle they have to overcome that's not of their own making. But absolutely, from a competitive balance standpoint, from a from a just plain lifestyle standpoint, they very much would have preferred to be playing at home this week.
The elephant in the room, of course, are the NFL protests. Rishard Matthews, wide receiver at Tennessee. This young man lost a brother in Afghanistan. His father was in the Marines, longtime Marine. He says he will continue to kneel. Do you have a sense that there will be others that will continue to participate in this form of protest?
Absolutely. I don't believe that this was a blip or a moment in time. This is something that's gone from some individuals making sort of their own personal statement, their own, their own sort of stepping out, right? Their own decision to not be sort of like everybody else, but to be willing to go out on this ledge. And as the climate politically in this country has continued to heat up, and as the president has directly inserted himself in it and basically called these players bluffs and challenged them in sort of his own twisted way to keep doing this, these are incredibly competitive men. These are men who come from all different backgrounds, who've overcome all sorts of challenges to be able to do what they do for a living. This is the best of the best of the best, and they have pride and they have a competitive nature. And now the leader of the free world is basically calling them out on a global stage. This feels a lot more like a movement to me than one guy here and then one guy there and then maybe one guy on this roster who are sort of taking a knee. This does seem more galvanized and more unified. And I don't get any sense that the president's backing off, because this is kind of what he's shown that he does. And therefore, I don't see the political climate ratcheting down. I think it will continue to heat up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder where this goes for players. I don't know. It's certainly not stopping. You're going to see more guys expressing their constitutional right to free speech and protected protest. I don't know if it leads to a political action committee. You know, does it ever become an athlete super PAC where you've got, you know, LeBron and, like, whoever, Cam and you know, athletes from different sports who actually decide that we're all going to galvanize around certain politicians, whether it's at the grassroots level, might be a state senator here, it might be a senator there or a governor here, might be, a national politician, somebody in election for the next presidency. And maybe they really do create their own platform and take this from, you know, the expressing your rights at the national anthem to actually helping certain politicians get elected who you think are going to make significant changes in this country with racial inequality,
yeah,
with social injustice and with police brutality. I mean, that's sort of where I get the sense that these guys are ready to go now, and they're looking for ways to direct this as a group, as a collective, beyond just on these Sundays or before an NBA tip-off. And maybe they do get together and make this something that becomes a little bigger than their sports.
JLC, appreciate it, man. Have a good one, and we'll be watching you Sunday.
Sounds good, guys. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Jace.
Jason Lockenfour, NFL, CBS Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on Geo and Jones. And, it's going to be, I think, as I mentioned, Rishard Matthews lost a brother in action over there in Afghanistan. His father, a longtime Marine, and he is stated that he's going to continue to kneel, and I think you're going to see others that continue to participate
manner. What percentage would you say, because I read the number after Monday night of something like, 300 players through the course of the NFL, through the course of the weekend, had knelt.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I thought maybe there were more, but that does sound about right, considering there were only about 14 prior.
Another 1,250 that didn't.
Right.
I loved everything Jason was talking about except for the Political Action Committee. D.C. does not need another political. They don't need another PAC in D.C.
It's too much money in politics already.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree? There's too much money in it.
Yeah, it's our money.
Exactly.
Damn it.
Yeah, it is our money. And we'll have more of that conversation. The Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers in particular, he gets into the action as far as protests and how the fans should interact and participate in what's ongoing on the field currently. We got that and a lot more coming up. But first, here's the truth. Many of you have simply had it. You struggled with pain long enough, and you want what I wanted, 100% drug-free answer to your pain. Yes, of course, I'm talking about Relief Factor. But really, the big news is that anybody struggling with pain can lower or even eliminate their pain with this wonderful product. My problem was pain in my elbow. I didn't know how to get rid of it. I was just dealing with it. Sometimes you're just resigned to the fact that, hey, I'm going to be living with pain for the rest of my life. But you don't have to take that tack. All you have to do is get you some Relief Factor like I did, and you're probably going to be skeptical, but I was skeptical as well. I'm not skeptical anymore. Maybe you'd like to play golf or tennis without pain, or take a nice long walk, or how about sleeping through the night without any pain? Neck, back, shoulder, hip, knee pain can simply be awful. Here's what I suggest. Go to ReliefFactor.com, order the 3-week quick start. It's at a super value of just $19.95, so you can see if it will help you like it helped me. ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384.
It's Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Believe It or something? Believer? Is that the title of it, Mike B? Are you up on this?
Sounds right. I could hum it, but it won't help too much.
It's a good song. I heard it on TV quite a bit.
Dun, 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 dun,
the Believer or something like that.
A fire. It's the same riff as that Fighter song.
Okay. Which I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
But I believe you.
Yeah.
Whatever you say. Yeah. But anyway, I think I like my
I'm a believer.
Brand.
I'm a fighter. Yeah.
Okay. I believe him. I believe in Brad Heller, too, I think. Because he's going to help me win my pick this week.
You're up to I think, Heller. That's good.
I think. Yeah. I think he's going to assist in my upset pick since I won last week.
Happy to assist.
I picked Texas Tech over Houston. Unfortunately, I didn't win our pick segment because that damn Aaron Taylor got his upset pick as well. So he got me, but I'm going to win it again this week. I'm going to be on the
sad, I was a sad second behind with you. I was 7-3.
Yeah, you tied me. Yeah, yep. You and I were the first losers, and Rick was bringing up the rear there. But anyway.
For whatever it means, I endorse your upset pick.
Well, of course you do. You're not going to go against you.
What do you got this week?
No. Who? What?
Your upset pick.
My upset pick. I mean, why not Syracuse? Why not Syracuse on the road? Them winning on the road anywhere is an upset. So
don't put him on the spot like that. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Brad Heller with another update.
All right, guys, we'll start with Major League Baseball and the Dodgers locking up home field throughout the NL playoffs.
Fly ball well hit to right center field. That one's got a chance, and that one is gone. A 3-run home run for Corey Seager. His 21st of the year.
Charlie Steiner on the Dodgers Radio Network. 9-2, Dodgers beat the Padres. Alex Wood going 6 innings to improve to 16-3. The Cubs' magic number to clinch the Central still at 1. They lost the Cardinals in St. Louis 8-7. Brewers beat the Reds 7-6. And Milwaukee 5 back with 5 to play. Brewers are a game and a half out of the final wild card spot behind the Rockies, who shut out the Marlins 6-0. In the American League, the East race isn't over just yet.
Swung on and drilled to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Starlin Castro hit one over the grandstand into the bleachers in left center. Wow.
John Sterling on the WFAN Yankees Radio Network. Yankees beat the Rays in New York 6-1. Red Sox lost to the Blue Jays at Fenway 9-4, so Boston's lead is down to 3 games as Chris Sale gave up 4 home runs. The Yankees did it worse to lock up home field for the wild card game. The Twins' magic number to clinch the second wild card spot is 1. They rallied to beat the Indians 8-6 in Cleveland. Minnesota's won 5 in a row. One other baseball note, Andrew McCutchen, his first career Grand Slam. He also had a 3-run homer, had 8 RBIs in the Pirates' 10-1 drubbing of the Orioles. Week 4 in the NFL kicks off tomorrow night. Packers and Bears at Lambeau. The Packers are asking fans to join them in linking arms during the national anthem. Giants co-owner John Mara said he's not happy about Odell Beckham Jr.'s touchdown celebration on Sunday in Philly. Mara said the team will deal with the matter internally. The Dolphins have reinstated linebacker Lawrence Timmons. He was suspended after going AWOL on the eve of the season opener. And from the NBA, Dwayne Wade expected to clear waivers today. He's reportedly going to join LeBron in Cleveland, a one-year, $2.3 million deal, gentlemen.
Woo! Taking a pay cut. First you give the Bulls $8 million back, and then you take a little pay cut to sign with your buddy. But, hey, when you got that much cake, you can do things like that. You mentioned, Brad, thank you for your update, but you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and he shared what the plans were for the Packers as they take on the Chicago Bears tomorrow night, and they're going to continue to link arms in a show of unity. And Aaron Rodgers suggested that the fans do the same thing. You think the fans will oblige him?
Some will. I mean, it's a much better idea than having fans that would sit or would choose not to be in the stands for it or anything else like that.
Right, and it was interesting the other night, the Cowboys chose to kneel prior to the national anthem,
right,
and they stood up during the national anthem, of course, with their arms
Jerry
linked.
Was at least consistent with that, because Jerry was the one a week or so earlier that had come out and basically said, you know, you kneel down during the anthem playing for me, you're going to be playing for somebody else.
Right, which is, there's a couple layers to that. One, Nate Boyer, Hook'em Horns, former Green Beret, played at the University of Texas. Mm-hmm. It was with the Seahawks, and he went down and met with Colin Kaepernick when all this first started. And he suggested to Colin Kaepernick, a Green Beret suggested to Colin Kaepernick that he kneel instead of sit on the bench. So that's where that all started.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a member of the military that suggested you kneel, and that would be more respectful than sitting during the national anthem. But yet, here we are with all this brouhaha about kneeling.
Yeah.
And there are others who have now taken offense, many others that have taken offense to that gesture, when it was a member of the military that suggested this from the outset. I mean, how ironic is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's that it came that way, I think it's extremely ironic. My opinion is my opinion as far as there's time and place, and mm-hmm. that's not the time nor the place for that. But, you know, if you're going to consider it and you're going to do it and for the most impact, yeah, that's a bang
right.
for your buck. And a, would you call it, is there such a thing as being semi-respectful? I mean, I'm saying that's semi.
Yeah. Well, but your goal and your intent is not to disrespect the flag or the military.
Mm-hmm.
Your goal is what you just stated, the word you just used.
Whether you're
to have optimal impact as far as getting your message out there.
Right. Well, whether your goal or your impact, whatever those are, have nothing to do with perception around it.
I understand
for a vast majority of the people out there. So that's what you have to combat with, you know, and getting that advice from Boyer that says something. Like I said yesterday, I mean, I've got a lot of respect for how Colin Kaepernick has followed his thing up.
Right.
How he handled it, you know, with either the pig socks and all that stuff earlier, that's water under the bridge. But what he's done since then is exemplary,
right?
In that his money, his time, his everything, getting in the community. I would say instead of forming a political action committee, players would look into the whole idea, team up with local police departments, team up going into schools and going into communities and going into shelters and going and get in and help these people sort of rectify lives and rectify problems.
Right, on the ground level,
yeah,
and I mentioned Malcolm.
Instead of going to Washington, D.C. and throwing money at D.C., because that's just an empty, steaming pile of whatever, and that nothing happens up there. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat or you're clean or you're dirty or whatever. Nothing happens, period. Do it at the grassroots level, That's where you're going to get the most traction. That's how players should look at this thing. If they're so inclined, go for it.
And I know that's what Doug Baldwin is doing up in Seattle. I know that's what Malcolm Jenkins has done down in Philadelphia. He's put some action behind his protest, and he's doing the ride-alongs. He's doing it at the grassroots level. There's some Jets that are involved in it, and New York Giants players that are also involved in their community. There are a ton of players around the nation who are involved and always have been involved in their community.
All it is time.
It just doesn't get highlighted because we want to see the car wreck, and we'd rather generalize about these players and marginalize players.
Guys like your guy Odell Beckham.
Yeah, we'd rather focus on that shiny object. And what, to your point, it may not be the time and place, and we've heard that throughout time. Those who have been fighting against injustice and fighting for racial equality. So my question would be to those who say, okay, this is not the place for it. Do it elsewhere. Are you going to be there in lockstep, arm in arm with me if I protest elsewhere? That would be my question to those who say, don't do it here. I don't want to see that. I just want to see my game and get entertained. Okay, fine. I'm going to do it over here. Now, are you going to join me over here?
Well, my question would be, and I'm curious about seeing, if the league actually decides, you know what, we don't really need this grief. The national anthem is going to happen without the players, as it did for decades. And they're just going to have to find some other way to express this, what that develops into. And hopefully it's a positive energy that they can turn into the right way of doing it. What's a proper form of protesting the way you want to, the social change you want to see happen if you don't have that venue? I mean, what's option B in this besides the national anthem?
True. Well, you and I are in agreement there, but I also, as I stated last night on Inside College Football, I hate that this is morphed into a conversation about deriding or disparaging the military, because that wasn't the intent, and not one player has said anything negative about the the national anthem nor the military. Many of them come from military families.
Perception is reality.
I got you. But I also think
it's got nothing to do with
people
intent.
Want that to be their reality because they want to hide behind the flag. They want to hide behind the military because they don't believe in the cause.
At times, yes. In some cases, absolutely. And if anybody out there that says the president wasn't sort of speaking to his audience down in Alabama the other day, they're out of their minds.
Right.
You know, that's exactly what
he was. That was a dog whistle to them, yes.
That's exactly what he was doing.
Yep.
But, you know, just because something like that happens doesn't mean everyone has to react in kind, and it makes everybody associated with that is X. You know, you're a racist. You're a white supremacist. You're this. You're that. You know, you're not. I'm just going to check. You're not a member of Black Lives Matter, are you?
I advocate for them.
I believe
in what they're fighting for.
I'm just saying. Yeah. You're not a card carrying whatever.
Yeah.
You know. So that doesn't make you, just because you make a comment like that, I would just say, oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, you care.
Right.
You're directly affected.
Yeah.
You've got skin in the game, as they may say.
Right.
You know. I don't know. I just think we go from 0 to 60 nowadays.
I would agree with that.
And I think that is born of the social media idea and the fact that everything goes from what's up with you to F you in nanoseconds.
Right. Instead of having an educated conversation, sifting through all the BS and getting to the crux of the problem and trying to iron out our differences and come to a resolution.
Yeah, like this thing. We're not going to be able to kneel for the national anthem because we won't be out there for the national anthem. That should be the first Tuesday or the first off day conversation for the teams. Okay, well, how are we going to affect something that would really make a difference? Where are we going to channel this into? That's how you really affect change. This doesn't. All this does is piss people off on both sides of it.
There you have it. More of this conversation and D. Wade hooking back up with his buddy in a Cavaliers uniform. LeBron, will we get another press conference? Not one, not two, no, not three, not four. None of that? We're done with that, right? They got the two together.
Maybe. We'll see if they can get. Might be working on three.
Let's see if they can get one more. All that and a lot more coming up on Gio and Jones.
Keep up with the latest on the show on Twitter at Gio and Jones.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to the show, Gio and Jones, CBS Sports Radio. Randy Cross sitting in for Gio one more morning. And we had some NBA news yesterday. We had all kinds of news. I mean, it's been great for us.
Oh, yeah. And
this is not February. That's obvious because everything is happening right about now. And, of course, Dwayne Wade, we were discussing, he's going to join the Cavaliers. And then you got the baby making news in the NBA as we get back into the Page Six type of stuff with the Kardashians and Tristan Thompson, and they're expecting their first child. And then this was so incredible. Speaking of gummy bears, a new member of the New York Knicks, a guy who was a just incredible basketball player during his collegiate career, and that has never been that way he played at Kansas State hasn't translated to being an excellent pro at the NBA level, and Michael Beasley. But he had such a bizarre conversation with our former colleague at CBS Sports Network, Taylor Rook, who's now at SNY, has been there for a couple years, and does a phenomenal job. Beasley was just, this was, I didn't know, bizarre maybe too, maybe an understatement.
I believe when you're around some of the old dogs of journalism, of the hippie culture and all that, guys like Hunter S. Thompson, that was stream of consciousness is what you witnessed from Beasley yesterday.
Right, and we got a couple of cuts from Mr. Beasley and Miss Rook. Sit a spell. You're going to enjoy this.
You can research the human brain and right?
Okay.
It says that we are only capable of using 10% of our brain, right?
Yes.
You believe that?
No, that's.
Did you about to say it's true?
I'm saying that's what people say. That is the consensus scientifically.
So who was the guy that used 11 that made it okay to say everybody's just using 10?
That isn't the right logic.
No,
10% of your brain is the one that said 10%.
No, because if you're only using 10% of your brain, you don't even know that you're using 10% of your brain. Like,
he knew it was 10% of your brain based on your brain. You don't have to be using 11% to know someone else's 10%. He's saying, I'm 10%, you're 10%. Like, everyone's 10%. That is not mathematically correct.
That is not, like someone had
but
to.
But you have to have been using more than 10% of your brain to know that everyone else uses 10%.
Yes, because if you're only using 10% of something, that means you don't know the rest of the 90. You don't know the rest of the 90.
Yeah, you're right.
So I'm right. Perfect.
I'm not using any percentage of my brain right now after listening to that.
No, well, you lose percentages listening to stuff like that. That's what's known as red bud logic.
There you go. Right. I'm on that good Kush and alcohol. But he wasn't done.
So if I'm only using 10, right, I'm the first person in the world, right? Say I'm Adam. And I wrote that we can only use 10% of our brains. That means I would have to surpass the number 10.
No, okay, let me break this down for you.
You can break it down.
I'm saying I'm a doctor. I am looking at a brain. No, let
me finish. A doctor, listen. I get what you're saying. A doctor has to learn something. And everything a doctor learns is man-written. And everything a doctor learns is man written. So you can sit there and tell me you learned it, and yes, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. But it was a word that somebody else concocted.
No, that's not what I'm saying. No. Your argument was that the person that said 10% used more, and that is not the truth.
You're still hung up on my example. We're still stuck on the N word, and I'm trying to bring it all together.
What? Whew. I'm still trying to figure out. No, I'm not. I gave up trying to figure out what he was trying to convey there. And Taylor, I hope she's okay after having to sit there and try to make sense of Michael Beasley.
How do you go from a scientific theory that humans use 10% of their capability, their mental capabilities, to that.
It's a stretch. I have no idea. That's I'm not going to sit here and hurt what little synapses I have remaining trying to figure it out. Okay,
Well, the next hour we can talk about another thing in the news that happened with the whole thing around CTE.
We definitely are going to do that, and you're the perfect person to talk about.
I'm nominating Michael Beasley for the first test.
Yeah. We need to know right now.
He was dropped on his head as a child.
Do any of these biomarkers exist in Michael Beasley? You are correct, and I'm glad you brought that up because, as I was saying, you're the perfect person to discuss this with. You have done mountains and mountains of research around this topic, and you also announced on our show, after you had announced it publicly, you came on our show and talked about the fact that you're going to donate your brain for research. And so the revelations that were announced yesterday seem promising, still at the very early stages of this, but very promising. So I am definitely anxious to get your thoughts on what we learned from Boston University. They've been at the forefront of trying to figure out this whole CTE, the triggers and the markers and what leads to this debilitating condition. So, but Michael Beasley, he should definitely get on that train or bus and head up to Boston immediately.
Don't confuse ailment with stupid.
Yeah.
Some people have a legitimate disease they can blame it on.
That was just, I was bewildered sitting there listening to that.
So was he.
I'm going to have to text Ms. Taylor, make sure she's all right. She was able to survive that onslaught of nonsense that he was purveying there. Interesting. But more talk about CTE and some promising research that was announced yesterday, and a little bit more college football to talk about. Our buddy Rick Neuheisel is going to join us.
He's
going to
sing again, is he?
And for PDB, a little wrestling news. A little Ric Flair in the news. Mm-hmm. All that and a lot more coming up on Geo and Jones.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.